Well, would you like to hear some real-life X-File stories? You will in a moment. John D'Souza back with us on Coast to Coast. He was an FBI special agent, and we're going to talk more about him and the things that he's been doing next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Dr. John D'Souza is with us. He's investigated and collected experiences on paranormal topics for more than two decades. He was an FBI special agent who maintained a top secret security clearance for 25 years, worked in counterterrorism cases, handled the paranormal desk at the FBI in his investigations, helped inspire the very successful television show, The X-Files, and this led to his nickname, the X-Man. Of course, John D'Souza back on Coast to Coast. John, welcome back, my friend.
George, thank you so much. Merry Christmas.
You
Wonderful
too.
To be here with you.
How was your Christmas?
It was terrific. Traveling around on these conferences, trying to spread the word to people on ufology and paranormal exopolitics, things of that sort.
My spies tell me you were in China, John.
Oh, boy, was I, George. Yeah.
What's going on out there?
Well, I'll tell you, there's a lot going on. Apparently, this is like, for those who are more mature, this is like perestroika during the Soviet Union, when Gorbachev decided to open up the new openness, is what perestroika means, during the, I think it was the 80s, late 80s, when he did that. And apparently the Chinese government has decided to approve these ufology and consciousness conferences to go forward everywhere in China. And it is an amazing opening that is going on. I mean, this is the first time that I know of that we've had a general conference on ufology and consciousness topics in China, from Beijing to Shanghai. And it is opening up a whole new world for these people in China, you know, over a billion people. And they are starving and hungry for this sort of thing. And it is going to be opening up many, many more conferences, like the one that I was able to do just recently for a few weeks with Dr. Michael Sala and Laura Eisenhower, which was called the Galactic Exploration Conference. And it was an amazing time. It was an amazing opening of these topics for the Chinese locals, and they were astounded. They were astounded, and they were so receptive, the population there in China, and the government was very very open to letting us go through these topics and share these topics with the highest levels of Chinese society. It was amazing.
And John, isn't that unusual for a country that is shrouded in secrecy, a communist nation, to be so open about the UFO cases?
Yes, it is something completely new and astounding, because they remain a very secure, I'll just say the word secure, in many ways, society. They're very protected in many ways, in political ways. So for the decision to have gone forward at the highest levels to allow these general ufology conferences is really a huge, huge development for China. And it is something that is going to be paying great dividends for the Chinese populace for many, many years to come. And it's just getting started. It was a very exciting news for all of us in the consciousness and the UFO studies community, because it will continue to open up new worlds of people to awaken in these areas.
I want to talk more about this, John, but for a lot of new people who are joining the program, tell us a little bit more about you and this FBI desk that you manned and how that all came about.
Oh, well, it was the paranormal desk at the FBI was basically just me and my partner. Answering police cooperation requests from different places that were at their wits' end with what to do on some of these paranormal cases, and that went on for many years. And it was something that was very intensive for us, and it was something that was very new and unknown territory for us at the time. And it covered the spectrum of topics from UFOs to haunted facilities to many others, to missing persons, that were missing in ways that could not be explained in the physical world. So that was something that was really came about very gradually when I first entered the FBI many, many years ago.
Were you surprised to be given that assignment? I mean, you entered the FBI, you're a crime fighter and all that, and all of a sudden they give you, hey, you're going to handle our paranormal desk. Was it something you welcomed, or did you resist it for a while?
Well, I'll tell you what, it came about as soon as I went into the FBI, and I can tell you exactly what happened, because when I was actually recruited to go into the FBI, way back in the late 80s, what occurred was I went through FBI Academy, and we had a case. We had a very famous case that went on right about that time. It was called the case of Maddox and Platt. These were two bank robbers that showed up at a bank robbery site where they were about to go forward with another bank robber. They were serial bank robbers, and they were met there by a squad of FBI and police officers who knew exactly what they were doing and proceeded to gun them down, because they didn't give up when they were told to give up. And so they gunned them down. However, it was like a Terminator movie. They simply got up and kept going, and like nothing had happened. They had both gotten severe gunshot wounds to the point that they had, a couple of them had several fatal wounds. One of them had a severed aorta to the heart, and they had several other fatal wounds. However, they just got up and started and got their own guns and just started shooting, and they did a circuit around this. This happened in Miami, Florida, and they did a circuit around this parking lot where all the police had set up waiting for them, and they executed several police officers and FBI agents, and they simply got into their car. And this occurred in 1985, actually. And they got into their car, and they were starting to drive away. And one of the FBI agents who had actually been shot a couple of times actually popped up with a shotgun and finally was able to shoot them through the connection from the skull to the spinal cord.
Jeez.
And just severed that connection right there with a shotgun. And that was the only way they were both finally stopped and killed. So it became a huge scandal in the FBI after that as to how these guys did what they did. There were several searches were done on their apartments to find the number one theory was, at the time, a popular drug was angel dust. It supposedly gave people superhuman strength and power to do crazy things. And so there were toxicology things, because people were demanding to know how these guys were shot full of holes and still were able to execute several FBI agents and police officers. So there was this huge push on the toxicology of their blood, examinations of all kinds, and searches on their apartments. And what was found was that they had not even drunk a beer or smoked a cigarette. They were completely clean of any sorts of substances, and there was no explanation for that. So the case was basically used by the FBI for several years as an example of, you know, never giving up and the importance of, you know, fighting criminals who are determined, knew what they're doing, and so forth. So they tried to kind of use it as a positive in later years. However, when I was going through the academy, I was able to get together with a couple of the deputies that had done the searches on their apartment. And I asked them several questioned them on several things. They said they were under instructions to find any sorts of drugs, and they found nothing at all. All they found, and this was the interesting part, all that they found was a little altar to the Norse gods, a little sort of, apparently they were Odinists. And just before they went out for each bank robbery, they did a little sacrifice incense thing to the god Loki or Loki. And when they told me that, I said, that's it. That's how they did what they did. Because I knew that Loki was the trickster god of the Norse pantheon. And I said, this was what it was. And I told the deputies this, that this was the only explanation that there was, even though it was a paranormal explanation, because there was no other physical explanation for how they did what they did. Anyway, I graduated from the academy and got assigned to my first, before I graduated from the academy, the bosses there found out I had been asking questions about this case.
Okay.
They were very upset. And they accused me of being a New York Times reporter undercover in there.
Great way to start your FBI career, right?
Yes, it was a terrible way. And they get very touchy about these sorts of things, especially these cases that they kind of have up on the mantle as sacred sort of things. And so I was given a severe dressing down. I was told that I would never graduate the academy, which I still graduated. I was given a lot of difficulties in graduating the academy. But then when I did graduate and go to my first office, the bosses at my new office were alerted that, and the conversation I was told was, they were told, this guy likes to do paranormal cases, so let's give him a lot of those. Keep him busy with those. And that was how it first occurred, that I got assigned paranormal cases when I went to my
office. And I bet you saw all kinds of things, John, when they crossed your desk.
I did. I was assigned all kinds of things, and I was assigned even what's called old control files, which are kind of like administrative cases that you just have to keep an eye on that have paranormal instances in them. And one of those cases was from 1947, and it's available. It's the one that I always show people wherever I go, because now it's declassified. Well, at least one document from it is declassified. The smoking gun document that is dated July 8th, 1947. That is the document that shows on FBI at vault.fbi.gov. The one that shows the FBI agent who had the informant that he said was an alien visitor, who told him all the different truths about alien visitors, who they are, and what they're doing here.
Now, back in 1993, Chris Carter developed X-Files, a lot of that based on these files. How did he find out about it? I mean, did the FBI call somebody at Hollywood and say, you're not going to believe this stuff? I mean, what happened? How did this come about?
The FBI did actually do that. They called Chris Carter directly, and that happens more often than people think. What happened was in 1993, the first season of a new show called The X-Files was put out, and several of my bosses found out. They saw several similarities in my cases to that first season of The X-Files in several of the episodes. And so they actually ended up calling Chris Carter, the creator of The X-Files, and they questioned him on the source for some of the information, for some of the cases that he was able to put up there on his show. And he was questioned, but what he didn't know is that I was also at the other end of that conference call, also being questioned and being interrogated as to whether I provided information to Chris Carter. And of course, I was able to say that I did not at all provide information directly to Chris Carter. However, I did have a book. We call it the OTB book, the Off the Books Notebook, where we keep details of cases and things that we don't put in regular FBI files. My OTB book was taken from me previously, and I believe it was taken by FBI agents who became consultants to TV shows. And I believe they provided my OTV book to Chris Carter. But that was just my opinion. That's what I believe happened. But Chris Carter, for his part, he just told our bosses at the FBI that he had talked with retired FBI agents about procedures and had consultants of that sort, which is perfectly fine. And he told them that he was provided procedural details on things, and that was perfectly fine also. But that if they wanted to know more about details of episodes, they would have to tell him exactly what episodes they're talking about.
Interesting. Well, it was a very successful series.
And
it was a catalyst. So let's get back to China for a second, John, and then we'll talk more about some of these incredible cases you've been looking at. We'll take calls in our final hour with you as well. But were you surprised at the openness with these topics when you went to China?
You know, George, I was shocked. I was shocked at the receptiveness and the hunger for any shred of detail and backstopping and investigative detail on these cases that the Chinese people had at every angle, too. I mean, even people who were experiencers, people who were scientists themselves, people who were every stripe of person in the Chinese society were there. These places were enormous, and they were sold out everywhere we went. Myself and Michael Sala and Laura Eisenhower, the places were sold out, and it was standing room only, and the people were just so anxious to know what it was that we knew and to share that information with us. Like I said, it's a new openness that is just amazing, and the citizens know it too. They can tell, and I was just in shock at their receptiveness. Anybody who wants to see what it looked like, you can go to my Facebook, my Twitter, for John D'Souza, and you can see the events as they unrolled out. And it is, the enthusiasm is amazing. It's amazing because, you know, these topics here in the United States, we kind of take these for granted, and to the point where, you know, when we're shown partial disclosure from people, you know, kind of yawn. Kind of saying, okay, what else? What else have you got? When people show, you know, these UFO videos that are supposedly very authentic, and
they sure look that way,
right? And we show them here. You know, people are interested, but it's kind of like, well, okay, we've seen this before. You know, we want to move forward. But in China, I mean, they were grateful for any scrap of information on these topics, and for them, it was a revelation. As it was for us, too, sharing the stuff with them, because the wall, the truth embargo, the wall on truth embargo has been torn down in China, and that's the exciting part of this.
They may be the only country, then, to do something like this, John.
Yeah, well, to this extent.
To this extent.
In a country that is so, has so much security, I would call it.
Oh, my God,
security.
It's secrecy and everything else.
Yeah.
They hide everything.
Yeah, in a lot of areas, not business, but in other areas, politically and so forth, they have a lot of walls up. So the fact that the government was on the inside of approving this stuff and, you know, monitoring it also, you know, even as we had our conferences, and then the fact that they were still approving means that something has changed, I would say globally, something's changed. Something's going on that even a closed society like this is going to rip that. Is going to rip that wall down and let us go forward with these topics in public with their citizens groups. That's really something.
Your book, The Extra Dimensionals, where you made several predictions that have come to pass. I want to talk about that after the break, John. But it's an amazing field that, you know, is dedicated with some great professionals. And I think with your credibility, you push the entire field of ufology way up to the forefront. You really do.
Well, thank you, George.
We're going to be back in a moment. John D'Souza with us. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Couple names of his works, Clear Hearers, The Extra Dimensionals, The Para Investigators, and we're going to talk more about disclosure, partial disclosure, fake disclosure as well, and so much more. And also, don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and we will be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with our special guest, John D'Souza, today as we talk about extraterrestrials and the paranormal, and, of course, his work when he was with the FBI manning the paranormal desk. John, what would you say the majority of the cases that came across that desk were? Were they UFO-related primarily?
Definitely UFO, alien technology-related, and related to alien visitors in one form or another, or what people believed may have been these areas. And when I say people, I mean I mean sheriffs and police chiefs and people who are in charge of jurisdictions, and they came across cases that they just didn't know what to do with and didn't know who to turn to. And so they would just put in a form, a police cooperation form request to the FBI saying, do you have any subject matter experts that could work or give us an opinion, a consultation on something like this? And that was just me. That was just me and my partner. And we were the ones who would basically deal with that sort of thing.
Now, what is partial disclosure, fake disclosure?
Partial disclosure and fake disclosure are the same thing. Actual disclosure is what people imagine when the government or any government finally say, okay, you got us. We've known about aliens and UFOs all along. Here's the inside scoop on what's really happening. And I believe that's never going to happen because it would admit guilt on the part of many actors on withholding a lot of information and technologies that could have saved many lives since 1947. And I just don't believe the government, the national governments, have this inside information on anything the alien visitors or UFOs are doing. So they cannot produce true disclosure. What they do produce sometimes, and what we see at times, is fake or partial disclosure, which are almost the same thing. They'll use semi-private organizations or private individuals as a front in order to appear to release UFO data and alien visitor data. And wherever you see these government actors or these semi-governmental actors,
false flags.
Yeah, you'll see false flags, and you'll see fake or partial disclosure. And partial disclosure is basically, okay, here's this genuine, authentic video of a UFO, and we're going to show it to you. We're going to release it through the Pentagon, and here it is. Let's show it to everybody. And then there's no follow-up. There's no, okay, we know this is alien because here's the documentation. Here's how we know that this is alien. Here's what the alien uptake on this is. In other words, there's no completion of the disclosure. It's a partial disclosure where they would just show you the video and say, this is alien technology, as far as, but there's no backup to it. There's no follow-up government, because if this was really a governmental issuance or opening of these UFO files, then they would have the follow-up to it. They would say, and here's what the aliens said about this. Here's the feedback we got on this vehicle, and we're going to let you know. That would be full disclosure. That would be real disclosure. But we haven't seen that.
Why not, John? Why not?
Because I don't believe they have it. I don't believe any governments have it. The only ones who have that, actually, like, for instance, like my friend Laura Eisenhower, for instance, would say, I believe the only ones who have real disclosure are the elite powers in control, also known as the cabal, the fake government, the system of dominance that sits over the nations, the system of dominance that in 1947 sent out the orders to all the nations that UFOs have to be kept covered up, secret, and anything real about alien visitors must be kept secret at all costs.
What were they afraid of, John?
They are afraid of liberation. They're afraid of the citizens getting a hold of alien technology, of free energy, the same thing they were afraid of with Tesla. They're trying to make sure that we do not get a hold of technologies that could change their system of dominance over us. That's what they're afraid of.
How long do you think we have known about the existence of UFOs and their presence on this planet? It's got to be way before 1947.
I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was far before. I mean, if you look at even as I write in my books, if you even look at some of the records during the time of Alexander of Macedonia, when he was taking over various kingdoms, they had the incidences of the shining shields, in the sky, which whenever Alexander was taking over another city that was fortified, these shining shields would show up out of the sky and would start shooting rays at the cities that he was trying to, and knocking down their walls so that his troops could advance. And he wouldn't understand or know what these things were or why they were there, but he certainly took advantage of what they did in order to conquer more cities. And that's a matter of historical record. So these things, these issues go back into antiquity. Of course they do. But, you know, in the modern era, of course, it all started in 1947 when we really became aware and actually had the modern, well, what we think is the modern machinery to actually go after UFOs, which turned out pretty badly for us in 1952 over Washington, D.C.
There's one individual out there in the field of ufology, John, who doesn't believe that visitations are very friendly at all, and that's Dr. David Jacobs, who believes that these visitations have a tone of evil to it, not benevolent at all. What do you think of that?
I love Dr. David Jacobs' work because although I usually have a great disdain for scientists, he is actually a true investigator.
He's a great one, yeah.
The data follows, he truly follows the data wherever it would lead. And he is not afraid to leave behind material conclusions and go into the paranormal as a conclusion. So, David Jacobs' work is tremendous, tremendously important. And I actually find his stuff very important. And of course, he's right that there are malevolent alien intentions, and because we can see it in the cases, you just have to examine the cases. However, I would disagree with his work in one aspect, because I've in the many cases that I have reviewed and investigated and seen, I see cases of benevolence as well. I see alien visitors who have actually come and heal people's diseases, their conditions, have given them gifts and abilities that they didn't have before as well. So I've seen both.
I've seen
the types of cases that David Jacobs talks about, where it's just there's just like a pure malevolence,
mm-hmm.
like what happened to Betty and Barney Hill when they were abducted. Just a malevolence where it's just uncaring, unfeeling abduction, and where they were treated in a very, very evil manner. And yeah, there's a lot of cases like that, absolutely.
Could we say, John, the ET presence basically echoes this planet in that we've got great people, we've got some lousy people on this planet, we've got benevolent people, we have hateful people?
Yeah, I think that would be accurate because the cases show both clearly. They show benevolence and they show malevolence too. But what's really amazing is how the cases keep increasing in number, in volume, in scale. They just keep on increasing and they just don't taper off. They don't level off or taper off. Abductions keep increasing. And abductions that we can maybe not firmly put on alien abduction, but that could possibly have connections to alien abductions, because if you look at FBI statistics in the United States, we have an average of about 33,000 disappearances of human beings per year.
Yeah, they're just gone, vanished, poof.
Yes, people who are just gone, vanished without a trace. And we're not talking about deaths or any sign of any clues or violence left behind. Nothing, just gone, just disappeared. That's an enormous number, 33,000 to 35,000 per year in the United States.
And it might even be higher. Who knows, huh?
Yes. And it could be higher. And it is higher in other nations as well, nations that don't keep the kind of statistics that we keep. And so this is just, it's just not explainable on a physical level.
Can you imagine what it's like for a family, John, the mother, the father, to leave for the day? They come back and, they're in their home and they're going, where's mom? Where's dad? And they just never show up. They're gone. Yeah. No explanation. Nothing.
Well, it's even worse when the parents, the relatives, the
child
of these people are actually with the person around a corner, just goes around a corner, and suddenly they hear no more noise from the person or the child. They hear no more noise. And
are they like beamed aboard or something?
That's the sort of thing it looks like, because we have, for instance, we have a case in the national park, of course, where a three-year-old simply was, both parents were watching the child, and then the child just runs around a tree, around a pretty broad tree, and runs around the tree, and suddenly they don't hear noises from the child. They both move, look at each other, they both move forward to where the tree was, and they see the footprints gone, and the child is gone.
Oh my God, and they have to live with this forever.
Exactly, and now you multiply that by many thousands. That's the sort of thing that we're dealing with, trying to explain on a national scale, and it just doesn't work on the purely material level.
Were you able to pinpoint where these ETs are coming from, or are they coming from all over the universe?
Oh, that's an excellent question, George, because I have an answer for that one. And I would ask people that, because when I first started my FBI career, I feel that question was answered. And it's one of the things that led me to write my book, The Extra Dimensionals.
Uh-huh.
And here's where it was answered. It was answered in the smoking gun document, where people can look at this document and they can actually just go to vault.fbi.gov. They go to that site, and then there's this big old tab that says unexplained phenomena. And they just press that button. They press that button, and then that opens up extrasensory perception cases, that opens up cattle mutilation investigations, that opens up UFOs. And you press on the button that says UFOs, and then that opens up a lot of groups of documents, many, many groups of documents, because this is going back 100 years in FBI history.
Right.
And you just open up and go to group number one, UFO documents, and then you press on that, and then you go to page 22. And on page 22 is what I call the smoking gun document. It is a document that has hardly any strikeouts. It's just a one-page memorandum. It says, it's titled, A Memorandum of Importance. That is a document that is from an FBI agent who said he had an informant, and that informant was super normal. If you want to see the document, you can also, in my book, The Extra Dimensionals, I actually show the document also. And you just go to that on page 22. You can download this, too, for free. All these documents can be downloaded. They're the repository of all declassified cases and investigations in the FBI, declassified from going back 100 years. And so once you're looking at this document, you'll see that this FBI agent actually says he has an informant. And he says, my informant is super normal, which is an old-timey word for supernatural. Or paranormal.
Or ET, necessarily?
Yes. Okay. In this case, well, because of the context, it looks very much like he's saying his informant is an ET.
Wow.
And then he goes on to say, and I have to put out this document to all my fellow scientists, because apparently he's a scientist also. And he says, I'm putting it out to my fellow scientists, but because of who my informant is, scientists probably won't believe it, but I still have to put this out because it's the truth. And then he says, here's what my informant told me. And then he puts forward about 8 conclusions that his informant told him. And the number one conclusion that he said was, alien visitors are not coming here from other planets. They are coming from other dimensions.
Dimensions.
They are changing their vibration to match our physical vibration in order to enter our universe, to enter our planet, so to speak. And that's how they arrive here.
Would these other dimensions also be called the multiverses?
Oh, yeah, they would. He actually uses the old Vedic language, which he says, lokas. They are other lokas, but that's exactly what it means. It just means other multi-dimensions. That's what it means. And he says UFOs get here the same way. He says there's no one inside of UFOs. He says they're not inside of the UFOs. He says the UFOs travel on their own, and they are empty.
Are they like drones?
Yes. Like drone, but I would say more like familiars that accompany alien visitors and carry out little tasks for them.
Like our Mars rovers are doing right now. They're on Mars doing things, and then eventually if we send a man there,
yes,
you know, we've got more information than we thought we'd get.
Exactly. And it says, huh. and, it says in this memorandum. Like I said, anybody can download it and look at it for themselves, or they can see it in my book also, The Extra Dimensionals. And it just says that they are here for peaceful purposes. He says, don't ever attack them with our Air Force, because that would be a huge mistake.
Yes.
Because of their level of technology. And we saw in 1952 over Washington, D.C., that was borne out, that was absolutely correct. And then he says they are here. They're trying to find out if they can permanently inhabit our plane of existence. And he says, but they're here for peaceful purposes.
Well, that's good.
Please leave them alone.
That's a good thing. But I want to come back and talk with you more about these disappearances, John, and we'll talk more. We're going to take phone calls as well with the X-Man, John D'Souza, next on Coast to Coast AM. He's also working on a new work called The X-Man, A Paranormal Life. That'll be out sometime next year, which is just a few months away. We'll be back in a moment with your calls on Coast to Coast AM.